pleased that you're part of the podcast 360 Degrees Global Talent Management today. Welcome. I'm Sahar, founder, diversity coach, intercultural trainer, and speaker. This podcast covers topics related to leadership, work culture, DEIB, and new work. It is created for executives, leaders, people and culture professionals, CEOs, and anyone who is interested in strengthening a trustworthy, open, and sustainable company culture. You will get direct insight and conversations with business professionals and experts from various backgrounds. Our conversation topic today is artificial intelligence, AI, and its influence on leadership, its increasing role in the people and culture field, and trends. How can companies use AI-generated solutions to unlock the potential in the HR employee cycle? What impact has AI on jobs, talents, skills, and the future workplace? What is the role of ethics? And where is room for improvement to positively impact the process of innovation? My guest today is Roger Basler de Rocca. Great having the opportunity to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you so much for having me.
Before getting started, let me share some details about our podcast guest. Roger Basler de Rocca holds a master in digital business and is a PhD candidate. As a digital entrepreneur, book author, and top 100 speaker and trainer, he has been passionate about digital worlds with a penchant for artificial intelligence and algorithms for 25 years. His specialties include building digital business models and growth models through educational consulting and artificial intelligence. By the way, he was voted most popular sales teacher at HavidZ in Zurich in the year 2023, and he is an AI ambassador for good. I like your surname, Roger. Is it a mixture of various cultures?
It seems like, yeah. So it's very Swiss on one hand, the Basler part, and it's Spanish with de Rocca on the other part. So yes, I'm mixed and also have like quite a cultural background, as we all have, I assume.
Beautiful. So we have a mix of cultural background in common. Moving from the cultural perspective to the AI perspective, what is the main challenge in leadership in the business world without an AI awareness?
I mean, overall, we are facing an economy which is constantly changing. And on top of it, we have basically an information overload. We cannot really differentiate between what's urgent, what's important, and what's really to do now. And on top of it, we still live in a various, and I would say even narrowing down bubble, because all the information we see in the internet is basically created by 1% of the internet users out there.
And what are possible solutions?
I mean, after all, we have a lot of options where we can get information. As you just mentioned, I mean, there's artificial intelligence, we have search engines, we have newsletters, we also have events and people we can go to. But I think we really have to change our minds and our willingness to gather the information ourselves and be critical about what we see out there, what we make out of it. I see a lot of experts coming up in the field, claiming to know certain things. Some do, some don't. But in the end, we all have a responsibility to find and also form our own opinion about the constantly changing world.
I like how you describe it also as like an AI bubble to a certain extent we currently live and work in. So we need to find techniques to embrace all the positive possibilities, but also be very critical and reflective with our human mind. How can each of one of us gain a profound understanding of AI?
I think it's quite a challenging task, to be honest. I mean, I'm very deep into it, but I'm still learning and I realize I really know nothing. Fortunately, we live in an age and time where we can gather information quite freely and quite openly as well. And there is, for example, one course I can highly recommend. It's from the University of Helsinki. It's called Elements of AI. It's actually a three-part course. The first one is basically the introduction. What's AI? What's machine learning? What's large language models? What's technology behind it? Then there's a part in ethics, which is a very important part as well, because we're using a technology which will mainly really shape how we see the world, how we perceive certain things. And lastly, but this part is then optional and how fast to pay, is how to build an AI by yourself. And on top of that, of course, there's a lot of podcasts out there. There's great information provided by Microsoft, by Google, by OpenAI itself. But of course, you know, you always need to know who's the messenger and what's the message behind that.
Yeah, you always need to be critical about it, right? As you said, there are many possibilities. And I also went to the website, as you said, and yeah, it's really from the beginner's starting point of view up to the advanced level, and it's free of charge. So a great opportunity to learn more about AI. From the global perspective, working with AI worldwide, what's the role of ineffective data sourcing resulting in a loss in translation and data bias?
It's a very good question. It consists basically of various factors really have to factor in when we talk about AI. So basically what we perceive right now is artificial intelligence is basically just a generative artificial intelligence which has been trained by a lot of data. As I just mentioned, your question is basically the problem we have is that we don't have enough data in terms of equity and equality. And we also have a certain bias when it comes to gather this data. So having said that, if you train a certain model, a large language model to be exact, we need to understand that the basis for this data also affects the outcome. Having said that, for example, if we see that the internet consists basically just, say, 80% of English and Western influence information and data, also the models tend to go in this direction. Google just had a huge backlash when it comes to that because of their latest model when they tried to involve, for example, a certain diversity, which was then perceived as wokeness, but not in the good part, basically. And there we see really that there is a big influence and a big bias when it comes to gather the data and also on sourcing the data, because we need to make sure that all those models have a lot of data from various backgrounds, from various cultures, from various heritages. But it's not always that easy to gather this data because, like I said in the beginning, it's in bubble, basically 1% of the people creating the data. So we don't have enough things and sources to source from, basically.
Yeah, very important insight. Thank you for saying that. For me, like a personal point of view, can you share like a funny or unexpected example that you have experienced by using AI?
Yeah, so as some people know that follow me on social media, I'm a big fan of little red pandas. And for those who don't know that, they basically look like little cats. They're very fierce creatures. They're a little bit reddish or orange side. And I often tend to create images for my presentations for that. And there is a little issue if you're using AI, for example, in German or in French, because then if you use the sentence basically red panda, the model understands that I want to paint a panda, which is usually black and white, into red. So there's various images on my computer, which basically are just like red painted pandas, nothing to do with the little red panda, but there we see basically a formulated right question, but also there's a little bit of lost in translation, sometimes can come up as a funny example when you're using those kind of algorithms.
Great to know. I'm picturing pandas and dragons now and it makes me smile. So that's a good example of how AI uses its own creative interpretation assumptions. Now let us talk about leadership. From your point of view, what are three key characteristics that today's leaders need to have and why?
I think a very important fact before we go into those three is basically being open to learn a lot of new things. As I said, the landscape is constantly changing. So we need to understand that the information we provide today, for example, this podcast might have changed by the time we're listening to this episode. Having said that, leaders nowadays, they need to know, first of all, they need to know what to do with what. The instrument and what you do with this instrument, be it a platform, be it an algorithm, be it a technology, is really key in understanding the whole situation. Second, you also need to know your data. You need to know, first of all, where is your data coming from, where is the data from the model coming from, and what you're doing with this data. Because if you understand that you're using a certain model, certain instrument, then you also know the data, you can basically better judge and better reflect on the outcome. And third of all, I think we really need to empower the people, most of all, like ethically, in terms of how to use those models, but in terms of also how to implement it into the workforce, into our decision-making, because I see more and more the tendency, of course, that those kind of programs will be influenced in our daily life. And if you understand that what you're doing with it, where it's coming from, and you empower the people to do and form the right decisions ethically, we might have a chance to change the world for the better.
Yes, and there's like Mira Murati in her function of Chief Technology Officer and Project Leader, also described as the woman behind ChatGPT, and she claims the necessity of state regulation to lead to responsible and ethical usage of the AI results. From the business perspective, how can AI support and provide solutions to people in culture teams, management, leadership, CEOs on the strategic and operational level?
I think it's a great question, and it really narrows down the two importances of using technology in the field. So if we start with strategic decisions, AI and the models behind it may help us to get out actually from a certain way of thinking, a certain bias when we look at certain data, certain structure. We often use artificial intelligence also to question and challenge ourselves because there is no emotion in it, but you can kind of like implement it, but it also helps you to form and change your viewpoint. So strategically, it's very important to open up your viewpoint and basically use AI as a widening of your field. On the operational level, on the other side, it will help you to be more effective and more efficient, meaning that you might have more time at your hand for the more important, let's say, talks or for the meetings, for tasks at hand. Because in the end, of course, all those automations will help us to be more precise, but also in repetitive tasks more efficiently, which hopefully leads to better outcomes. So of course, there's two influences, but they need to be formed together. And when we use those kind of tools operationally and strategically, I think we can make and create more intelligent decisions and also develop forward-oriented strategies.
Yeah, like what you say, it helps us also to reduce the repetitive tasks and to focus on the strategic, more creative, human intelligent solutions. So we have more time also for human connection, right? Building, being there, talking with each other, having positive relationships, which will also lead to innovative, creative solutions and also create a state of belonging in the company culture. What I also found very interesting, I read that there's an AI algorithm that can even support companies predicting which sourcing channels are best to tailor attracting right candidates for specific positions and specific roles. So it can also be used as a decision-making assistant, right? Which gives you some possibilities or recommendations, but still you have to think about, is it useful? Can I really use it? Or do I need maybe to take another way to try again? I would like to go back to the topic we had in the beginning of our conversation. You mentioned data bias. Let us talk about unconscious data bias. There exist varying bias types that make assumptions, interpretations, or even stereotyping based on cultural background, generations, gender, and so on. Knowing that AI has an undiscovered potential, data results can also be misleading. What kind of effect could this currently have in the area of diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging when it comes to hiring, retaining employees, and the offboarding process?
It's a very complex and also very great question in terms of what we just talked before when it comes to sourcing the data and understanding the models behind it. Because you just made the example of, for example, we can elaborate which hiring channel might work for the best when it comes to sourcing. Of course, you can only measure what you already have implemented and used, meaning that if you're just using, let's say in brackets, just using online channels such as LinkedIn, for example, Indeed, you only have two sources to choose from. And basically the AI will then tell you, for example, LinkedIn is the great choice. But because you haven't fed it with, for example, let's say Instagram or with Glassdoor or with any other platform, it will not come up with that. Having said that, when it comes to the hiring process, there's of course a hiring bias because you might have legacy systems with a lot of legacy data in it, which basically shows a certain structure of data performing a certain way that certain people are preferably chosen when it comes to hiring those kind of people. And if you're not very cautious about it, it might develop into a certain demographic, into a certain bias towards certain candidates. And of course, nowadays, especially those AI models have a big disadvantage, for example, towards women, especially towards women with part-time jobs, because the data is, first of all, it's not there yet. We don't have enough data. And the data we have is strongly biased because, of course, it is competing against basically a vast amount of data of mainly manly 100% working influence data. Not saying one is good or one is bad, but of course, this has a certain influence when it comes to hiring process. When we move on, for example, for retention, and when we want to keep people in the workforce, there's, of course, the evaluation part. If you only have a certain system which has been evaluated by certain parameters, because it's only this data being available, we might have a certain influence. I mean, it's basically the same thing as if you look back in your career and you think, like, I've always liked to work with a certain kind of people, certain characteristics, for example, or certain educations or where they're coming from. This can strongly bias our future decisions, meaning that if we are not very careful with training those kind of systems and implementing and also interpreting the data, we might basically not perform and also not support the right people along the career process. And then people might leave because they're feel not recognized. And then, of course, if it comes to offboarding, there are certain, let's say, inequalities and certain biases when it comes to, for example, certain layoffs. We all live in challenging times. And sometimes, of course, corporations have to change and they have to lay off people. But do we make the right decisions? And do we really have the right offboarding process and not burning all the bridges we're coming from? So there's a certain unfair treatment of certain groups during the offboarding process, again, based on this historical data.
Yeah, and it helps also to be more careful about the decisions we make and reflecting on them once again, and also reflecting on why we made these decisions. Are there, as you said, assumptions because we like those people, or are they really qualified enough for it? Mentioning the three-step plan that you just did about questioning hiring procedures, retention challenges, and the offboarding process, how can organizations ensure equity and fairness?
I think it all starts with, of course, empowering people to let them know and also teach them what to do and better understand in terms of forming their decisions. Having said that, of course, there need to be certain regulations and processes in place. For example, it's highly recommended that you have a certain audit process. An audit process when it comes to sourcing the data, but also testing the data and the systems behind it. Because if you don't test regularly a system, especially in this ever-changing world, and because algorithms, of course, develop, you might run into a certain bias and a certain disadvantage for certain people. Then, of course, you need to make sure that you have diverse training data. I mean, if your company basically serves a certain demographic or a certain client base or hires a certain demographic in people, you need to make sure that you understand that this data highly influences your future outcomes and your future decisions, meaning that you always have to reflect and also reassess on this data set. In the end, I used to say that ChatGPT is a very powerful tool, but the thinking tool up here, your brain, is much more important. You need to implement human oversight. People with experience, people with knowledge, people with diverse backgrounds have to look over the systems and take influence and make the right decisions. And of course, if you build all those systems with enough transparency and accountability, you make sure that people might have a certain influence. And on top of it, they might leverage the data and the AI for the organization for the well-being of all of us.
So brain power is top, right? That's actually what is our biggest asset, which we should use, as I've heard you correctly. Which tools exist and support us in all the topics that you mentioned, Roger?
I mean, of course, there are certain bias detection software. There is the IBM's AI Fairness 360 tool. There is certain flows when it comes to data sourcing and data analysis. There is a lot of data sourcing when it comes to data set generators, meaning that nowadays, for example, if we train certain models and also in research, we do have a vast amount of data which we can train those models on. There's some platforms such as Textio, for example, which uses to analyze certain job descriptions and getting out the bias out of it. There is AI ethics toolkits, for example, the one we just mentioned from the Elements of AI part, but there's also other parts from other universities. There's a lot of tools out there. The problem sometimes we have is to tailor it down to our organization, to our own values, to our own mission statement, of course. But fortunately enough, those tools are also developing faster and faster and more. So for example, in terms of diversity, equity, and also inclusion and belonging, there's a lot of data and a lot of tools nowadays available, which you will find basically with a good research, also with a partner who's experienced in that.
Very good to know. I wasn't aware of that there are also a really vast amount of tools that can support you in that. What are your recommendations?
First of all, as you just mentioned, Mirati, before, there needs to be certain guidelines and certain regulations. So, of course, when you develop a diverse team and you have ensured that their values are right and aligned, you need to have certain ethical AI guidelines. Those guidelines have to be lived. If you don't ensure continuous education and training, those guidelines are just words on a paper, meaning that you have to constantly develop and constantly develop further. There needs to be a lot of transparency, meaning that if you start from the very top and you communicate your decisions, please tell all the people where is AI involved. When it comes to the candidate experience, when it comes to recruiting, when it comes to daily operational tasks, for now, we need to declare and basically make sure that people understand where is AI involved and where is not, because it helps us understand and reflect on decision made. Of course, when it comes to all those different parties, because we're working with software, we're working with different partners, there needs to be a certain stakeholder management. We need to bring everybody to the table. We need to have constant open discussions about it, not only when it comes to the hiring recruiting process, but also when we have, for example, changes and change logs in the software, but also when it comes to training and sourcing, not only new people, but also new tools. And lastly, of course, there's a certain risk, meaning that you need to be aware that you need to constantly reflect on it. You need to constantly monitor it. And of course, make sure that you're not running into a certain bias and into a certain risk when it comes to your organization. But like I said, with the steps we just have taken, with the guidelines, with the training, with the continuous ongoing improvement and transparency, I think we're pretty good on track.
That are some key recommendations. So let us move forward. How can this also impact the topic of new work? Flexible working options, working remote from home, or even globally with multinational teams. How is new work interlinked with AI?
We can make some very easy examples. So, for example, when we work with different time zones and different work schedules, there is AI which helps us to align calendars, making sure that we have the right time for the right people at the right moment to meet together, right? So you find the right meeting spot. There's also a lot of tools out there when it comes, for example, to project optimization. You don't need to constantly sit in a meeting, a Teams meeting, if you're just basically eardropping all the time. Nowadays, with solutions like in Teams or in Zoom, just to mention two brands, you can basically transcribe the whole meeting, you can summarize the meeting, you can get out all the tasks and inform certain people to just be in the loop without attending in the meeting, which gives us more freedom, of course. Then, of course, we can personalize our work environment. For example, if we have certain solutions such as the Microsoft Copilot nowadays or Microsoft Viva, which gives us greater insights in our daily work and also helps, for example, line managers or department managers perform better decisions, because you don't need to constantly talk to your people. Of course, you do, but there's also a lot of basic data on it, which can support the next talk and prepare you for the better. And of course, when it comes to talent management, AI can help you to identify the talents within an organization. You can basically visualize and show within an organization where is knowledge, where is good collaboration, where is people sitting on nuggets of information and knowledge, which you then can basically distribute among the whole organization. And lastly, I mean, if we talk about different locations, different time zones, different people, when it comes to translation, we nowadays have real-time translation, we have video translation, we have a lot of tools available, which emphasizes on the promise of new work, where people can work together in different settings and in different environments at their own speed or their own time. So I think that's great, because we can basically just use tools to further and elaborate on that.
And to make life easier, work easier. So very, very good examples you just mentioned. You mentioned many tools, so let me move forward with two existing tools that I know about. They are called HeyGen and Sora. Hey, Jen uses read people's faces like avatars and voices and can even translate to multiple languages in a very authentic way. This can lead to fake accounts and unwanted usage. Sora is a new AI tool that creates videos through text instructions. I had a look at it recently, and the realization is very convincing. Can you share insights about these tools and how it could be used in the business field?
Absolutely. So you just mentioned Sora, and Sora is also from the developers of a company called OpenAI. And what they managed to do is basically they created a model where you can, with a very easy and precise text prompts, create a whole new way of animation. The big, big advantage coming from Sora is that it's not only looking very realistic, but it also goes on up to 1 minute and maybe soon longer. And it's very indistinguishable from the work humans have made. So there's various videos out there. It's not public yet. It's basically just for red team users, which is basically beta users and some researchers. And what it shows us is basically that you don't need a lot of preset information because the data set they sourced was already so good that it can create new frames and new types of videos. So I think it's a big challenger when it comes, for example, for Hollywood productions or Pixar movies. But of course, it will also influence our way how we perceive, for example, advertisement or, for example, some company image movies or things like that. The model behind it, however, is so powerful that I don't think it will be released to the public just yet, because it really basically is a new way how you perceive reality. If you see the people walking through Tokyo, that's just amazing. HN is maybe going to the same direction, but let's put it maybe one level below that, because it's using your existing data. Basically, we record ourselves for a few minutes. We can also talk into a microphone and record our voice, and then can clone those kind of patterns. Having said that, it is repetitive to a certain amount, meaning that if you have a certain tone of voice, for example, if I do the same thing again and again, not sure if people see my hands, for example, but if I do this once, my avatar will also do this again and again and again, which is a little bit of a tricky thing. Sora will not do that. That's basically the big advantage they have, but HN will do it. What I love about HN is basically that I cloned myself, I cloned my voice, and now I'm available in various languages, in various settings, with various backgrounds. And I can use it, for example, for introductions when it comes to standard processes, or for example, for onboarding processes in various languages. So I think it's a great opportunity to not only save time, but also foster inclusion.
Oh, that sounds very interesting. I would love to see that avatar maybe at our next session where you introduce yourself. And yes, there's so much more to come, but also the limitations, as you said, there are still restrictions, and because it can also be used in a negative side of way. AI is changing the way we talk, interact, and work with each other. It's providing already very, very creative solutions, and we are still in its early development stage. According to a Forbes article that was issued last year, there are 10 most important AI trends for 2024. There's one quote I would like to share from the article with its focus on upskilling, and it is as follows. It's frequently said these days that AI won't take jobs, but people who use AI will take jobs from those who don't. What are the three HR AI trends, and how will AI impact jobs?
I totally agree with the quote, by the way. I do think that short-term to mid-term, people who understand how to leverage certain tools and certain models will be in a big advantage. Mid to long-term, of course, AI will replace certain repetitive tasks and repetitive processes pretty easily. So for example, I see a big trend when it comes into AI and recruitment. For example, identifying the ideal candidates with an automated workflow, let's say, for example, through the LinkedIn talent solutions, then scratch and scrap certain resume tasks from the profile, match them with our job descriptions, and automatically reach out through an automation to basically make them aware of, hey, we have seen your profile, we would like to have a talk, please get back to us at your earliest convenience. So there are certain automations which helps us identifying and also maybe predicting the right candidate. Having said that, the functionality, for example, to find for an ideal candidate based on an existing CV is already implemented, but those kind of things will be much faster, much better when it comes to finding the right talent for your corporate fit. Second of all, I think when it comes to personalized learning and development experiences, nowadays you can feed a system with your background, of course, with your educational path and with your job role, and the system will come up with new skills, new learning paths and ways on how to basically obtain new skills, as you just mentioned, reskill or upskill certain tasks and certain skills. So you will get or see a more and more trend towards more personalized learning paths. And it will also be multilingual, for example, because you can just use, you know what, today I don't feel like talking English. I want to have it in French because I'm feeling more French. So the avatar or whoever will teach you will be teaching you in French. And of course, lastly, when it comes to the big, big trend of AI data analysis, when it comes to talent recognition, when it comes to retention, AI can really identify you with certain blind spots you may have and find the right people for the right corporate fit within your organization. So when it comes, for example, for employees interaction, for performance, even some social behavior might be identified. But having said again, always look at the data, because if you don't measure it, you can't manage it.
There's so many transformations going on. So as you said, in regard to digital jobs, new roles, new skills, flexible and also emotional intelligent mindsets in the workplace will be crucial, because to stay competitive and innovative, you have to be open to new ways of working and thinking. And AI is like the big wave we are all trying to get on. We dived into the AI digital sphere, and now I would like to know, how do you enjoy your free time to recharge your batteries when you're not thinking about AI?
I mean, as you can imagine, it's pretty hard to not think about AI at the moment because it's constantly on our minds. And it's basically also in our phones. I mean, our phones are basically 80% is machine learning algorithms in it anyway, if you're not behind a new goggle. But having said that, I really, really enjoy my time offline. I do mud races, which is, maybe I've seen some YouTube clips where people just running through the forest and they get very dirty and they jump up cliffs and things like that. So I do that. No tie, no white shirt, no hair made, just running through the mud. I do a lot of yoga. I do Kundalini yoga, which also helps me like to basically reconnect with everything, because my brain is basically all over the place. And yeah, I like reading books, paper. So without any distraction, I try to basically make sure that I'm offline, disconnected and reconnect, so I can basically sharpen my brain again for the new digital era.
It sounds like a brain retreat. So like a very great balance between fast mud races on the one hand and slowing down with books and yoga routines on the other hand. Thank you so much for sharing that. Let me summarize the key findings of our conversation. First, define an ethical guideline within your company and be open for change and lifelong learning. Second, be aware of AI bias and rethink and question not only the answer, but also where it comes from. And third, have fun along the way and know we have a bigger chance to change the world for good. Roger, is there anything you would like to add that the listeners should remember?
Maybe just one thing, and please remember that things will change and they'll always change. But as long as you stay curious and have an open heart and open mind, you might change the world for the better. So I totally agree. And I thank you very much, Sarah, for this wonderful conversation.
Thank you so much, Roger, for sharing your experience. It was fun and insightful talking to you. Where can the listeners find more information about you?
So the most easy way, you basically go to my landing page, which is www.roger.social, which will then lead to various social interactions as well, such as LinkedIn, TikTok, and so on and so forth. And of course, if you want to reach out on LinkedIn directly, very happy.
Thank you very much to the listeners. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. Follow and like this podcast. I would love to get a 5-star rating from you. And please share your feedback for future podcast episodes. Stay tuned for more.